So it's kind of a fun place to jump off. And I would say my answer is first of all, we kind of just need to remember a few things. First thing being, yoga is a practice, right? It's a practice. In its sort of in this context of asana anyway, it's a series of movements intended to create an effect. And your intended effect is probably not what everyone in the room experiences, right? That's something we've gotten into a lot in advanced trainings is how do I try to reach more and more people in the room and try to pull them into my theme and my intention? And that's kind of some of the work that Leslie's talking about is, you know, the sequences she feels like are strong. So we hope that that effect is being received by, let's say, a majority of the people in the room. But there is a good chance, probably even a great chance, that there are students in the room who don't experience the effect that you're intending the first time you teach it. Maybe they need to learn it first. Maybe the effects have to build over time. So, first off, I would say repeating yourself is awesome, right? Repeating yourself and watching the students grow more comfortable as they grow more accustomed to the movements and the novelty of it and to the sequence. And over time, the thing starts to unfold kind of organically. It's like when I was prescribed to practice at Krishnamacharya's Yoga Mandram in Chennai. You know, they told me to do this practice every day for 6 months before I changed it, because I wanted to change it on the first day, right? Once I got a look at it. Did it entertain me the first time I did it? A little. Did I think it was too slow and gentle for me? Yes. And it took me several weeks, maybe even months, did I start to appreciate that this thing was kind of having the right effect, right? It took a whole lot of abhyasa, it took a whole lot of consistency for me to actually start to get the picture. So, something to keep in mind, right? Another thing is just that patience is huge. So there are all sorts of ways to have a big experience really quickly, right? If if you want to see God tonight, go and drink a cup of ayahuasca and sit in a pitch black room, right? Or go eat 6 grams of psilocybin mushrooms, right? You'll meet something so obviously cosmic and enormous that you'll have no way to put into words your experience the following day. Right? You'll feel different. You'll feel enormously different if that's what you do this evening. But the path of your life and the rest of your experience, your dharma, basically, it'll have a pretty difficult time adjusting to this enormous amount of new information if you were to go and have this, you know, high-grade psychedelic experience, right? It's hard to receive a lifetime of information. It's jarring to receive that kind of sort of wallop of information in a single night. And yoga, on the other hand, works in a different way from 6 grams of psilocybin, right? Yoga is a day-by-day process. It's like bit by bit, pose by pose, joint by joint, muscle by muscle, cell by cell, right? Fiber by fiber. It takes time. But the blessing of that time means you have this opportunity to chew each bite and to savor it and to let the words kind of roll over your tongue, right? To digest them and process and assimilate them. So I'm just trying to say we have to be patient, right? With ourselves and with our students. So I guess I'm just trying to say to Leslie and to all of us, it's absolutely okay to repeat ourselves, right? Hafez would say, with repetition, the alchemy is forced to rise, right? It's only when something becomes familiar do we actually start to transform, right? I mean, I wonder how many poems the guy actually wrote, right? The Divan, the kind of collected works of Hafez, is said to be around 700 poems, and that's just the ones that made it into the book, right? So how many thousands of poems are there out there that this guy wrote that didn't make it into the book? He had to repeat himself. He had to say it over and over to get it right, right? So maybe just something to think about. Another thing is that we just need to remember we can teach the same class. Oh, I'm getting a good comment from Pam here. Pam's saying, I love repeated classes. The more I do it, the more aware I am of my progress. It's a great measuring stick. Yeah, let's not forget there's whole schools of yoga that repeat every class, right? The Bikram series, the Ashtanga series, So there's even some sort of tantric schools. There's one called Agama Yoga in India, which has a script. You know, every class has a script, and that script cannot be modified or changed, right? It can't be added to. I remember hearing the teacher, he'd always say, that will do, like we would do a pose or two, and then he'd say, that will do, and that was like his cue of come out of the pose. And I remember thinking like, ugh, like it sounds so dry to like have this, you know, chakra experience in triangle pose and then have this kind of robotic teacher voice. That will do, right? But there was something methodical about it. There was something growing with all that repetition, right? And yeah, it's very hard to see your progress if you're just doing a different thing every day. Also, it is possible, Leslie, to teach the same class or even to practice the same class with a different focus, right? So you're doing the same poses, but your consciousness is in a slightly different place, right? Most of you have probably found that in your own practice, sometimes it's like you can discover a new way to breathe. Just all of a sudden, randomly, you're like, oh, wow, I've never really breathed into this little corner before, this little crevice in me. And all of a sudden, it's like all your postures start to feel different. You're like, oh, wow, this is new, right? So that's kind of another direction you could go, right? Same outline, same skeleton, different breath. Yeah, Pam's adding, it becomes more of an active meditation as well. The autopilot allows you to fall into the zone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a moment, it's funny, you know, like I often, one of my sort of impatient pet peeves, let's call it, is when I'm teaching a room and they kind of get ahead of me, right? Because they think they know what's coming next, and so they start to move faster, and I often get a little impatient, and I'm trying to remind people, no, slow down, stay with me, right? But in a sense, it's kind of a beautiful thing when the students get ahead of you, because they're starting to move with their own breaths, right? And they're getting into this beautiful little autopilot groove, right? They're falling into some kind of a zone. They're listening to their own heart. They're listening to their own breath, and that's a victory, right? But probably, you know, most importantly, we just have to practice what we know. Or in Leslie's case, to teach what you know. And that's just a question of, well, what's your personal practice like right now? You know, how long are you entertained with the same practice before you feel like you need to change it up again? So maybe, you know, she's talking about this sort of week by week thing and her own personal intention. That's awesome. You know, maybe this month your self-practice is based mostly around stabilizing because you're on the road and you need the steadiness to be cultivated every morning, right? So that becomes your practice, and maybe that's what you focus on in your teaching that month. I'm trying to remember, I was there was a practice teacher tonight here at Anamaya, and she said something like, oh, you know, she said at the beginning of the class, she said, we'll start this practice like I start every practice in the morning with some neck circles. And just something about hearing that, to me, it's like it sort of validates what's happening, you know? Like, to me, that says, oh, this person is experimenting. They're researching. They're studying this tradition, you know? It's like when somebody says, well, like, this morning I was doing the sequence and I realized that blah, 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 blah. You know, you're like, oh, okay, like, this person's legit. They're discovering what works for them. They're researching and they're learning what works for us. So, right, we teach people what we know. We teach people what we're working on ourselves. And maybe that's, you know, 3 solid weeks of forward folding. Maybe it's teaching that same sequence over and over and over and over and over. And it gets refined, right? It improves. The sequence gets better as they get better. And so you'll keep coming up. I think, you know, and I think Leslie's doing that. You keep coming up with new ways to warm them up and new poses with which to climax the class. And you come across other teachings that support the process that you're going through, right? As you say, like, find a way to connect to this intention over dinner, right, on the bus. So really, I think all we need to do is just continue to study, and our teachings continue to get better and better. And there really is, you know, as far as, you know, finding ways to spice it up or make things interesting, there's an infinite number of directions to go, right? To choose what's appropriate for the moment. You know, some people teach according to the seasons, which has a great sort of history, a tradition of success in Ayurveda. You know, your whole kind of summer series is very different from your winter series. That's kind of something I really miss about teaching week by week classes year after year. Because when you're with people kind of over that long period of time, you can really start to play, right? You could teach based on the prevailing dosha of that season. You could teach according to cycles of the moon. If it's the middle of summer and there's a heat wave, right, your practice on Agni and Uddiyana might need to be thrown out for something different. Your folding practice might need to be skipped 1 week because of, you know, students' physical limitations or pregnancies or anything. But eventually you'll find yourself with a handful of these sequences that you like, right? And she's talking about writing a new one every week. So it won't be very long before you find yourself with a dozen sequences like that, right? And then maybe even a few dozen, maybe someday a book of sequences, which you can sort of flip through and choose, right? What's the best one to apply in this different situation, right? In this totally different day or same day, different, right? Different studio. So I don't think there's really any right or wrong here, Leslie, and there's not even any simple answers. Some of you out there might be like the spreadsheet type, you know, and you could chart out an entire year and say, like, okay, from, you know, December 3rd to December 19th, I'm going to teach these topics, and then during the holidays, I'm going to focus on this stuff, etc., right? But other people might just have more success following their intuition. You know, what feels right this morning? But I will just say this again, and I'm sure you've heard it before. It's better to have a plan and not use it than it is to not have a plan. Right? It's better to come prepared, and then be ready to throw away that plan or modify your plan than it is to just come unprepared and wing it. And it sounds Leslie like you're on that path, right? The way you describe this skeleton class. So yeah, I hope this has been useful, helpful, both for teachers and for students. I think there's a lot to be said for kind of choosing and just being aware of how much variety do you actually need and how much consistency, kind of like what Pam is saying, how much repetition actually can you handle without needing to change, right? The same meditation every day, the same asana practice every day, whatever it is. And if you're interested in kind of collecting data and quantifying your progress, man, is it great to repeat.